Hello, it's Dan Le Batard. Going to do something a little different off of the news this week with South Beach Sessions. Over the weekend, I spent a lot of time in phone conversations with my friends and with people I care about after Kobe Bryant's death, just reaching out because there was something about everything that happened there that made me want to tell the people that I care about that I love them. And as part of Le Batard and Friends and the things that we do around here, we just like talking to our friends. And so I want to have the conversation with three folks from ESPN who know this Kobe Bryant story, not unlike a conversation I might have with them over the phone when Kobe Bryant passed. So let's begin among the three people with Rachel Nichols. I've known her for a long time. We've all grown up. The three of us have grown up with Kobe Bryant in our careers. And Rachel Nichols, having come from South Florida, can tell you a little bit about how complicated this man was, but how interested he was and curious he was in learning and getting better from a real human emotional connection. So let's start with Rachel Nichols. Rachel, this outpouring that we're seeing all over America, I'm taken aback by it when my colleagues are sobbing or broken on air, where I can see that no one is faking insincere sadness. There's just a mourning throughout basketball as if a piece of basketball has died.
I think it feels that way. I keep saying you can't tell the story of the NBA without Kobe Bryant. There's probably 10 people on that list I could say that about, but it goes further than that, right? You can't tell the story of Los Angeles, an entire city, without Kobe Bryant. He wore that across his chest and was the most visible person who represented Los Angeles for more than two decades. He was a landmark like the Hollywood sign here. And this is a city that has obviously gone through some things, right, and has had different identities. And he was the face that let people feel good about themselves here, feel together and unified in a way that has sometimes been a real problem in this city. He meant so much to so many people, but it goes beyond basketball or even beyond one of the largest cities in the country. If you think about all the people who had Kobe Bryant come into their lives in one way or another, even if it was just on the television, how many people can't say, yeah, Kobe Bryant was on when this was happening? He is a fixture of American life. He is part of just everyone's life, even people who weren't sports fans. And I think to have this be so sudden and just so implausible in the moment as the news went around yesterday morning, that's part of why you're seeing all of this, is that he was an essential thread in the fabric, whether you're just talking about NBA, whether you're just talking about California, or you're just talking about being an American in the last two or three decades. And that thread is gone.
Rachel, help me navigate a bit of a minefield here, because you're speaking of him in saintly terms. Many people are listening to this or watching our televisions, and there's a mythologizing about him that is really deifying him today. And there's also a sexual assault settlement that is part of his story and had him at the center of perhaps losing his freedom. I'm curious how we juxtapose. How are we supposed to reconcile those two things?
Well, I think it's two parts. One thing is to realize that I'm not sure that everyone's talking about him in saintly terms. There's a big difference between saying, oh my God, he was just such a big part of everything and such a presence, and he was a perfectionist in this way, or he was funny in this way, or anything like that. But that doesn't mean that he was a saint. He had parts of his life that were very troubling. And I don't like to say mistake, because I don't think something like sexual assault falls into that category. But just because somebody wasn't a saint, because they weren't perfect, doesn't mean that their loss isn't something that leaves a gaping hole. So I think that's kind of the first part of that. And then the second part of it is the actual assault itself. None of us know what happened in that room. We know that the two people affected had their lives changed. We know that they both had different versions. We know that there is no criminal conviction, but there was a civil court settlement, and that also a public apology from Kobe Bryant. And I know that in the years after that, one of the things that was very important to him was being different toward women. I'm not sitting here to tell you that that makes up for anything that happened in that room that night, but I can tell you it was important to him. And you could see it in his private interactions, but you could also see it in his public interactions. He became one of the most vocal advocates for the WNBA, not just as a sport, but in the treatment of women as equals who deserve to play the game the same way anyone else did. Obviously, the way that he put his daughters front and center, not as being my daughters, but being their own people who are going to have these individual lives. And it's part of what makes, of course, talking about his daughter Gianna so tragic. We saw Kobe do that with different parts of mistakes that he made throughout his life, because he wasn't a saint. And again, I'm using mistakes in different ways now for different things. He got into trouble with the NBA for a homophobic slur and really worked after that to approach his attitude, both in word and in deed, differently toward people who may be affected by when he said things like that. He made some comments about Trayvon Martin. Jemele Hill wrote beautifully about this, that really rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, and he got more educated on that, and then in subsequent years spoke out very eloquently on matters of police brutality and the way that young black males are treated in this country. So I just don't think that it's the same thing to say that people are reeling over the loss of Kobe and talking about his outsized impact on the game and American life and saying he was a saint. He was definitely not a saint. I don't think any of us are. And what I do ask of people is not that they can never be redeemed, but that they try to be redeemed. And I saw Kobe trying to be redeemed in a lot of different ways for different parts of his life that he would go back and do differently if he could. We can't go back in time, but we can try to do better. And I saw him several times trying to do better in a lot of ways.
Well, we saw him grow up, right? Like, we don't have to eulogize him in terms that are too sparkling, but we got to see him grow up into a man who did some learning. The picture at the end, Rachel, is of him being committed family man, and that had to be a hellhole for them to navigate in their relationship, his family life seeming to fall apart with that sexual assault settlement.
Sure. I mean, Vanessa famously threw him out of the house, threw his clothes on the street. But, you know, people, as you said, people work through things. You're married now, Dan. I'm sure you know every marriage is different and has different challenges, and part of the beauty of marriage is working through the hard stuff, not just the gaga, lovely stuff. And, you know, they were married for, I think, 2 decades. They were able to do it and had 4 beautiful children. And I just kind of, the pain, if you're Vanessa Bryant waking up this morning and realizing everything that happened yesterday is real, I can't fathom it. I just can't.
Rachel, it's the first thing I thought of. It was the very first thing that I thought of after the shock subsided. Like, oh, my God, that poor woman.
Right. I mean, I will say, you said, oh, my colleagues on the air crying. I was reduced to tears several times while having to talk about this on television yesterday. And it was Gianna that did it for me. I will miss Kobe terribly. I have known Kobe half my life. I met him 23 years ago when I was a young reporter and he was a rookie. I've told the story a bunch over the years because it meant so much to me. Dan, you knew me then. I was a young woman at a time where young women were not super welcome still in a lot of locker rooms. I had a hard time sometimes getting players, even coaches, to answer my questions or talk to me. And I went to go do a story in Los Angeles on a rookie named Kobe Bryant. And not only did he make time for me, you know, we sat on a bench for 45 minutes and talked, and I ended up telling him a little bit about what was going on with me and who I was, and he told me about how on that Lakers team, he was not welcomed with open arms by the veterans. I mean, they were not thrilled with this kid from high school getting all this crazy attention. Remember the Brandy stuff, all sorts of stuff. And they felt like, hey, we're the Lakers. We're the ones entitled to all of that. And there was definitely some hazing, making fun of how young he was and just sort of not including him in things. And we're talking about kind of how discouraging all of that felt sometimes to reach this thing that was your goal and these people you admired so much, not having them want you there. And he just sort of looked at me at the end of the interview and said, you know what? We're going to be all right. He said, they have no idea what's coming. And I will always remember that and did use that over and over again through the years. So I will miss Kobe so much. He also lived a very full life. He lived 3 people's lifetimes in 41 years. And so while his death is an extreme tragedy, the person who didn't get to live her life is Gianna. the person that just breaks me every time I think about it is this 13-year-old girl who found her voice in getting to play a sport she really loved, all the reasons that young girls should have equal opportunities to play sport, to get their hands dirty, to know what it's like to be on a team and win and lose. She was just at the beginning of all of that. And I've met her several times. She was so smart and funny and sassy and could take the wind out of Kobe, no problem. That is the tragedy. I can't get past it. And the other kid who died on that plane, and the mother and father and families, every single one of those 9 people have so many people who miss them. And it's something that's going to take a long time not to feel really raw about.
You love basketball, but it seems to me that this one reached you more as a parent.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's who Kobe was in these last couple of years. And because I live in Los Angeles, I got to see and experience him as that. I saw him, I want to say a month and a half ago, and he did the thing that parents do. He grabbed me by the arm and made me look at pictures of this in his phone of his baby because, you know, she was 5.5 months old or 4 months old, and we're, oh my God, she's changed so much since she was born, blah, blah, blah. All of the stuff. It's devastating because this is something that we will all spend the week talking about, and we'll have a lot of conversations about it, I'm sure, at the All-Star game, and we'll talk about it a lot. When the Hall of Fame ceremony comes this fall, it was supposed to be Kobe Bryant, Tim Duncan, and Kevin Garnett, maybe the greatest Hall of Fame class in the history of basketball. And instead, I mean, God, can you imagine what Kobe's speech would have been like? We'll never hear the speech, so we will talk about him then, and we'll talk about him through the years. But Vanessa Bryant and those other 3 girls, they are going to have to wake up every day and miss them. And that's the hardest to think about.
Rachel, I appreciate your time. You do it in a really heartfelt way, and your journalism is impeccable. Like, you really did speak well on the behalf of everybody involved with the NBA and your feelings. But beyond that, like, your personal connection to Kobe Bryant really came through. Like, it was obvious that you guys developed a very strong, fair, journalistic relationship, and that you grew to admire him and his curiosities and how he grew.
Yeah. I mean, look, people, you give a front row seat to some of these athletes' lives. I think about that with LeBron or Kobe, and Dan, there's so many people you can say that of. You watch it. You watch them change. And again, no one's a saint. He certainly was not a saint. But I watched him do things that were good, and I watched him do things that were terrible, and I watched him try to get better after that. And that's the biggest thing I ever want from someone. And I saw him try, and I saw him do it.
Rachel, I appreciate your perspective always. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our thanks to Rachel Nichols. I've been a little surprised at how moved people keep getting when they talk about this stuff, how much it hurts them in ways that they can't even talk their way through it. Even the most professional of people. Our thanks to Rachel Nichols for continuing to go down a path that no parent ever wants to think of. Let's bring in now Amin El Hassan. He's worked in basketball front office of the Suns and on the West Coast, and he really loves basketball. As you know, Amin knows basketball. Amin knows basketball. He picks everything wrong, but Amin knows basketball. So let's talk to Amin El Hassan a little bit about Kobe's connection to all things basketball. I mean, during the local hour, Izzy Gutierrez broke down crying, talking about Kobe Bryant. Your reaction as someone who loves basketball and sees him as a symbol, like, how deep does this one cut? Because I've been a little surprised by the outpouring, even understanding where it comes from.
Man, you know, it's tough because Kobe and I are roughly the same age. He has 4 kids, I have 3. We graduated high school the same year. So there are a lot of parallels between him and I in terms of our experiences growing up, particularly as fans of basketball, as people consume basketball. So it hit me pretty hard knowing that this is a peer in life, obviously not a peer in basketball, and knowing this was someone that I both watched as a fan and then watched as a competitor you know, game planning against him, and then watched as a media person, an analyst. The other part of it that really hurts, and then I'll tell you that yesterday when I got the news, I'd already done 3 hours of radio. I was going home, and I had to go back to the studio, and we did 3 hours of live radio. So all the news is coming out, and it's trickling in. I kept it together, and the one time I lost it on air was when I found out that his daughter was in the accident, and the other girls who were her teammates as well. For whatever you want to say about Kobe Bryant, and yes, 41 is tragically young to pass away, but on some level, he got to live his dream. His dream was to be an NBA player, to be a great NBA player, and he got to do that. And yes, he has new dreams, and he was going to go on to do other things in other arenas, not the least of which fatherhood and shepherding his children into their dreams. Gigi didn't get a chance to do that. And I look at my kids, and, you know, as heartbroken as I would be that they had to lose me or their mother, I'd be 100 times more heartbroken to lose them. And I can't imagine what Vanessa's going through right now.
That is one of the things that I imagined is uniting people across the country in a way that is pretty seismic, is how many parents can identify with the horror of all of that, because, you know, your first thoughts end up going to Vanessa and what her day was like if indeed she got the news from TMZ, as the L.A. County Sheriff says, and then she learns that her husband and her child are gone. I got to imagine that what's happening here to a lot of people outside of sports is making the parenting connection.
Yeah, and Dan, to be honest with you, that definitely shifted this thing into a different zone of grief for most people, it's, you know, especially those of us who did not know him personally. But I got to tell you, his passing, like when the first news came out that it was him, it had a reaction that transcended basketball and transcended sports. I had a friend who's not a huge NBA fan, who was at a brunch at a restaurant in New York. And she told me the moment the news came across, the entire restaurant found out at the same time. You see people pick up their phones and gasp and, you know, kind of be in shock. And, you know, that's pretty tough when you jump off the sports page and you enter mainstream news. But this is who he was. He was iconic. And I think for even people who weren't sports fans, they knew who he was. And
why, though? Why do you think that is? Because he is another champion. Like, he is, across sports, we have 5-time champions. Why that with him?
We talked about this before, Dan, about the cult of personality, of the, you know, the kind of cathedral of Kobeism that he built, where people exalted him as more than just a basketball player, and certainly more than whatever place he has in basketball history. I think it was an incredible marketing job that in life served him well, and in death has made him, like I said, an international symbol and icon. And I think part of it also, Dan, is just the tragic way it went. You know, he didn't die in his sleep. He didn't pass away, you know, due to illness. He died in a helicopter crash. You know, my friend, you know, in one of my group chats said, he overshadowed the mode of transportation. You talk about helicopters from now until the end of time, people are going to think the first thing they'll think about is Kobe Bryant. And that's a pretty strong statement if you think about it.
I'm wondering as I chronicle this, I'm wondering what has even felt close to this, because this ends up feeling, when you start walking around and see all these people down here for the Super Bowl and you run into them and they're sort of ashen-faced. They're ashen-faced as if they lost themselves a loved one, in a way that is pretty overwhelming. It's hard to ignore the way that has hit people in the face. But as you look at the at the Lakers as a historic franchise, as enduring and surviving Magic Johnson's AIDS crisis, as him pushing out Shaquille O'Neal to make that his town, forever his town, in a way that LeBron James can't even take over that town. Is there a way for you to articulate to us what he meant specifically to Los Angeles? Because I know Miami has had similar feelings for Dwayne Wade, but they got to see him grow up. They actually got to see him go from a teenager, like a lot of us did, from a teenager to a legend.
I think that's you hit it on the head. Unlike Dwayne Wade, who showed up 22, 23 years old with a kid, right? He's already kind of lived life on some level. Unlike even Magic Johnson, who showed up at a 20-year-old. You know, Kobe was a child. He was 18 years old on a team full of grown men and went from not playing at all to starting in an All-Star game before he was even starting for his own team to obviously being one of the greatest players ever put on that uniform. And what you're looking at is a guy who became a man in every sense of the word, got married to an L.A. Girl, had his kids, raised a family, and spent that entire career, 20 years of which, in L.A. At some point, he's not from Italy. He's not from Philly. He's from L.A. And I think that's a different kind of dynamic when you think about that embracement of a city or an area, I guess, because he technically lived in Orange County, and embracement, like, this is my home. Dwayne Wade doesn't have that, you know. His first wife wasn't from Miami. Yazin is not from Miami. Miami embraces Dwayne Wade, but it's not the same because you didn't have that full incubation that you have. And you think about your formative experiences, what's made you into who you are as an adult. Most of those things happen between the ages of like 16 and 21. And 3 out of those 5 years he spent in Los Angeles. So I think that's part of it. And I think obviously, you know, incredibly successful. And again, a personality, a personality that we like to admire, right? In general, we like to admire the ultimate competitor. We like to admire the no excuses guy. We like to admire the I hold my teammates to a higher standard, even when my teammate is one of the greatest centers of all time. I'm still going to hold him to a higher standard. These are the traits that we attribute with leadership and with success, in regardless of the field that we're talking about. And in a town that cherishes success probably more than any in this country, you know, people resonate and react to that. And I can tell you that area right outside across from Staples Center where they had the Grammys, so people couldn't even get across the street. So they all congregated in what they call Microsoft Square, which is that little area in between the ESPN building and the Microsoft Theater. It was nothing but the people, not Hollywood, not people from Beverly Hills, but the actual people of Los Angeles.
Can you explain to people in a way that they can understand, encapsulated, whether it's in an anecdote or some other way, his will? Because it is really unusual in sports to get a guy, and I think Michael Jordan's the only one we would put in this category, to get a guy who is simply known as being more willful than everyone else.
I believe it was his fourth season. It was the season they won the championship. A lot of people don't remember this. He started the season with a broken right hand. His shooting hand was in his cast, so he had to do everything left-handed. And so he beckoned over to one of his teammates, John Celestand, who was a standout college player in his own right. I believe he was a four-year player in college, so him and Kobe would have been around the same age. He says, let's play horse. And he proceeds to play horse left-handed. Not, hey, you got to make these left-handed shots. John, Celly, you shoot whatever shot you want to shoot, and I'll shoot it too, but I got to shoot left-handed because I can't shoot with my right hand. He beat him. it's an insane amount of competitive drive right there when you think about someone who should not be doing this activity, let alone doing it competitively and doing it to a point where he beat a four-year college standout and an NBA pro. And then if you want to take it a step further, I think the most iconic moment is the day he ruptured his Achilles. You know, in the NBA, you got to, if you don't shoot the free throws, you can't stay in the game. If you leave due to injury and someone else has to take the free throw for you, you're out for the game. He's ruptured his Achilles. He's obviously not coming back. into this game, but he literally picks his Achilles up through his through his skin, hobbled over the free throw line, makes both free throws, and then gets taken out of the game. And then the final part of it is afterwards in the locker room, I believe it was Eric Pincus of Bleacher Report asked him, is this the last time we've seen Kobe Bryant? Are you going to play again? And Kobe, you know, took a moment and he said, yeah, I'll be back. This isn't the end of me. But you could tell he was emotional. He was shaking. And later on, he said that quote was kind of what made him really push him through his rehab to try and come back.
That second story was better than the first one, a horse story against a four-year college player. I really felt like you remembered in the middle of that story that you had a better second story. I think that's what happened.
That's exactly what happened.
All right. Thank you very much, Amin. Appreciate your perspective, as always.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks to Amin El-Hassan there for spending some time with us. Before we get to our final guest on this matter, Jorge Sedano, who has gone from Miami to Los Angeles and is very much and was very much a Kobe guy. Before we do that, let's tell the people who's sponsoring this week, Mike, please.
It's brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hiring is challenging, but there is one place where you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. And growing businesses connect qualified candidates. Cafe Altura COO Dylan Miskowitz experienced how challenging hiring can be after unsuccessfully searching for a director of coffee for his organic coffee company. But then he switched to ZipRecruiter and saw an immediate difference. And you can too by signing up for free at ZipRecruiter.com/beach. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you, it finds them for you. And its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job so you get qualified candidates faster. In fact, after posting his job to ZipRecruiter, Dylan was amazed by how quickly he got candidates applying and found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sites. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/beach. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BEACH.
You've heard Jorge Sedano dropping in sideline references to the show here. He went 5 for 5, and now it's kind of caught on. Izzy Gutierrez keeps coming back at him. Ariel Helwani tried to get into the game. So we've really enjoyed fooling around with those sideline interviews. And Jorge Sedano has been someone you see all over the jump, all over the NBA coverage that we have here on ESPN. And I wanted to talk to him a little bit about what he's learned about Kobe since getting to Los Angeles and seeing how deeply rooted his roots were in Los Angeles. So let's talk to Jorge Sedano about that. He grew up with Dwayne Wade during this era of basketball in Miami. With Dwayne Wade, he had that connection where basically Sedano's entire time in Miami, all the winning, the only winning, was Dwayne Wade. And so then he moves to Los Angeles, and it felt like he was becoming a Kobe guy. And it felt strange to us in Miami to watch this transformation. What voodoo did he sprinkle in your face that made you be somehow both a Wade guy and a Kobe guy?
Fatherhood, man. That's what happened. I think that was the difference. I got here right after he retired. So the only Kobe I got to see regularly, outside of the few times I had covered him, you know, over the years, was the fatherhood Kobe. And I think that just struck a chord with me, having been a new father and just kind of seeing how he was a different person, right? Like, it was just a different chapter in his life where he wasn't the maniacal, intense guy he was on the floor with his kids. He was gentle. It was a different side than I had ever seen in the opportunities I had to cover him. And that's where it was.
And so the humanity of Kobe reached you, or you're just a syrupy softy because you have your own kids now. And so you're the one who changed. He may have changed some, but you changed as well, Jorge.
Yeah, no question. I think it's absolutely both of those things. I think that all of this stuff is buried in that. Like, you know, you always hear stories about, like, you know, once you have kids, it'll all be different. And, you know, you think when you're single or you're just, you know, married with, you know, and don't have kids, you're like, yeah, whatever. And then it happens. And then, yeah, syrupy happens regularly, like way more regularly than you'd think. And that's why when this thing happened yesterday, all I could think about was the kids And then when I found out that those, that his daughter and the kids were on there, like, I'm, then my mind goes to a place like, oh my God, like, what were those last few moments like when this thing, when he knew for sure, like, this is not going to work out? Like, how do you comfort there? Like, what do you think? What do you do? How do you react? What do you say? Do you say anything? Like, that's all that's been swirling in my head for the last, you know, whatever it's been, 24 hours.
The final moments, right? Because it's hard to move around that one. What, how does it feel to know you're about to die with the most helpless feeling in the world that you can't save your child's life?
Right. Like, I'm sure in his own mind, like, it's like, you know, take me, not them, right? Like, if that's possible, like, that's probably the only, now you're talking about split seconds, right? Like, that's, you know, that's what you're probably thinking, right? Like, do you hold her? Do you grab her? Like, do you hold her hand? Do you hug her? Do you tell her everything's going to be okay and probably lie in that situation? Like, man, like, just what you have to just, like, mentally have to deal with in a couple of split seconds had to be just ridiculous.
Can you explain to us the connection with Los Angeles? Because you've got Magic Johnson conquering HIV, and at one point, Laker fans thinking he was going to die young, looking at Kobe Bryant and saying he's the greatest Laker of all time. LeBron gets there. He can't be Kobe. It's always going to be Kobe City. Kobe pushed Shaq out, and it remained his city. Can you explain the link between that city and that guy?
I can, and here there's layers to this, right? So what I would say is, first of all, much like you referenced earlier with Dwayne Wade and Miami, L.A. saw Kobe grow up, like literally get here a wiry 18-year-old or whatever it was, youngest player to ever play in the NBA at that particular moment, and go from the kid who airballed shots against the Utah Jazz to winning championships and have – you know, some of the highest of highs, and by the way, have some of the lowest of lows and stumble, right? Personally and professionally, and endure all of that and overcome all of that, and then still find himself at the top of the mountain again after Shaq, despite all the stuff that had happened professionally and personally. And he is as interwoven into the fabric of this community unlike any other athlete. And over 4 years, that I've been able to absolutely ascertain. Like, there's no doubt about that. And there's a great story in the LA Times today. Gustavo Arellano wrote a story about his impact in the Latino community.
You pronounced the hell out of that, my friend.
Thank you.
Please do that again, just for the people listening.
Gustavo Arellano. Of the LA Times.
I felt like you did it better the first time.
Okay, Gustavo Arellano.
Aha, mejor.
Okay. Wrote a story about how Kobe connected with the Latin community. Obviously, you know, Vanessa is the daughter of Mexican immigrants. And I, you know, that, so the story talks about how she first took him when they were dating to this restaurant, this Mexican restaurant in her old neighborhood in Orange County, and how he would go there, and that's where he really learned to speak Spanish, and he would watch novelas with his wife and his mother-in-law, and, you know, Sábado Gigante, and just like, he was constantly working on that stuff because he was always challenging himself, right? So I think, like, things like that, right? Like, you hear those type of stories. But I do think it's, as crazy as this is going to sound, like, the whole Mamba mentality thing, like, that's a thing here. Like, that is something that he has done that has allowed people who grew up watching him or watch him, you know, as adults, they allow that to be something that they can apply to their own life and sensibilities. Like, you know, the way they look at it as, they look at it this way. They look at it as, you know, I'm a sales guy. I got to be as focused. I got to have the
right
work
ethic. This sounds crazy. What you're saying sounds crazy. You're saying you've adopted the Mamba mentality.
Yes. The town, I am not joking when I tell you that the town has absolutely adopted the Mamba mentality. I know that you, of all people, would think that's wild.
It's ridiculous. No, it's not that it's wild. I know we need to be celebrating Kobe right now, but that's ridiculous. That says that Los Angeles is ridiculous.
It says it fell in love with someone. I think that's what it is. You know what I mean? Like, he stole their hearts. And I think that just history, right? Like, all that stuff. People they relate to him on that kind of human level, like that they can apply that mentality, those sensibilities to their everyday life. Like, I'm not joking when I say that. Like, that is something, regardless of who you talk to, he connects rich, poor, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, you name it. They love him for that. And in the immigrant community specifically, they love him because of the work ethic. You know this, right? Like, your parents come to the United States as Cuban exiles. You know, they work their ass off, right? They don't, no days off, that kind of stuff, to give the best life they can. That's his work ethic. It's why the immigrant community specifically is super attached to them. Like, he actually referenced the Latino community, but the immigrant community specifically, in his farewell speech, like in his last game, like, he talked about it. Like, the connection he has with people here is unlike anything I've seen anywhere else. I know plenty of people in New York, and Derek Jeter is their guy, but it's not like that. It's not like this. Dwayne Wade, it's not like this. Like, this, Dan, I'm telling you, is different because it hits different layers and different levels. As ridiculous as it may sound, that is absolutely the case.
I'm not disputing the last part of what you said. Just the idea, though, that he would be a bit of a god in terms of imparting upon others the wisdom to have better success in their work lives, that makes him a bit of a Tony Robbins on top of everything else.
Sure, I guess you could say that. But that's, he believes that. You know what I mean? I don't know if Tony Robbins believes it or not. Maybe he does. But Kobe sure as hell did. I don't think there's any doubt.
Do you have any stories that you've enjoyed above all others from fellow players in the last couple of, last 48 hours?
Oh, man. Let me think. A lot of the stuff that I've gotten is the stuff about how he kind of, I don't want to say changed, but how he had a different view and perspective near the end of his basketball career. And it went from, I'm an assassin and I'm going to kill you and I'm going to take you out no matter what, and just the passion to win and the defiance, to being more open to being collaborative and kind of training guys and working with young guys from a basketball perspective. That was what I got a lot of, right? Like, I was at the game in New Orleans yesterday, and Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, and Josh Hart, who never played with him, they missed him in some cases by a couple of years, but at least by one season in one of their cases. But he was around enough and invited them to work out and train. Like, they felt like he was still a huge part of their life, and they were broken at points before that game yesterday. Like, Alvin Gentry and David Griffin both talked to me about how they had to really console those guys. A couple of weeks ago, we did a game with Jamal Murray, Mavericks Nuggets, and we mic'd him up. And in that session, he was talking to us about working out with Kobe. Like, Kobe really became a teacher later on. And as you talk to a lot of the guys, Drew Holiday was another guy we talked to yesterday. Jason Tatum worked out with him, another young guy. Like, that is kind of the thing that I gathered the most, that he went from being the assassin to being the guy willing to impart wisdom, which wasn't always necessarily the case early on.
Jorge, good talking to you. Thank you for making the time, buddy. Appreciate the look from the other side, because you saw all of that stuff in Miami. And so when you're saying it's bigger than that, bigger than anything you have seen, people can understand a little better what the connection is.
You got it, man. Anytime.
Our thanks to Jorge Sedano. Thanks to everybody who helped put this together, Amin El-Hassan and Rachel Nichols. Also, Roy and Mike. And so we should advertise Mystery Crate. But before we do that, what did you guys think of all that? Are you guys worn out? Are you guys just unbelievably tired and emotionally drained?
Not the greatest start to the week, obviously, but I thought that you hit the right tone. Not that many people care what I think. Are you just bringing us around to tell you how great you are?
Yeah. Yes, I was hoping that that's what you guys would do before revealing to the people why they should listen to Mystery Crate. Yes, how great was that? Was that great? No, that's not what I was asking you guys. I was just asking you why you look so broken. Like, both of you looked like you just crushed.
Yeah, this is anytime something like this happens, you view your own mortality. Roy and I both have daughters, and obviously something about you changes when that happens, and you just put yourself in those shoes, and you can't help but have your heart broken a little bit, or a lot of it, for the family, and for, as I hate to even relive it, but we've mentioned it a couple times about like those final moments on that helicopter and what a father.
I saw you squirming around when they were talking
about what a father must feel in that moment. It's a horrible thing.
Yeah, I held Claire for a very long time to the point where she was actually pushing me off her.
Yeah, that was bad. I got to hold my daughter for 7 seconds before I needed to do the next ESPN.
We needed to talk to the next 7 insiders. Yeah. All right. Tell the people what's going on with Mystery Crate during Super Bowl week.
Well, Mystery Crate right now is a mystery to us. I know at time of recording, we're prepping to go to media night as a unit.
That's pretty cool.
So if you want to hear a montage of like 7 second question and 6 second answers from the left guard of the San Francisco 49ers.
Oh, this is going to be good, though. So you guys are going to be the wacky show that goes to media day.
I think we're just going to end up being shy and get pushed out of the way by the people that are really wacky.
I've got a great story for you regarding all of this Super Bowl stuff before we get to any more Mystery Crate talk. Hank Azaria, as the Brockmire character, at one of these news conferences, went up to Golden Tate and said, clapped his hands and said to him, "Hey, I know you. You're the winner in that adult category of, porn film, Golden Taint." And Golden Tate just stared at him. And so you guys are going to do stuff like that.
Do you think
right?
Golden Tate turned a corner and was like, "Was that the camera guy from Godzilla?"
Is that what you guys are going to do at Super Bowl Media Day? No?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't even know if we want to promote it because we don't know if we're going to use this, but we have a bunch of content opportunities at Radio Row. So it's going to be a fun Super Bowl themed. Last week, we bounced back. Last week was the beginning of what seemed as though it was a mental health breakdown. This week, we're going to rise above and put out something that we're, I don't even want to say proud of, but we're going to put out something.
Okay, but it starts Super Bowl week after the last Mystery Crate when you were short-circuiting and it seemed like your life was coming apart. Then Kobe Bryant dies, and then you get swallowed for 24 hours by all things content-related.
Right, it doesn't stop.
And the Super Bowl is here, and the party starts, and you don't even know right now if you're DJing for Shaquille O'Neal's party anymore, do you? Do you even know if that party's still happening?
That's what I was actually doing. If you want to like put yourself, like where were you when you learned the news? I was preparing for Shaq's Funhouse, which I'm DJing at, and I just ran downstairs in stunned silence. I just said like Kobe to my wife. And then after I digested all the news and I stopped my rehearsal, I haven't even gone back. I was like, I wonder if this is even happening. I can't even imagine someone like Shaq, who's Shaq and Kobe. It's like Batman and Robin. It's word association. What he must feel.
I was taking my wife's car in to be serviced, and the guy working on the car told me that Kobe had died. That's what happened to me.
And you told me.
And then
told
I told
me.
You.
Dan told me.
Right before I sent it up the chain in Bristol to get that verified.
That's Roy really did. I was surprised. You got to pay attention whenever Roy sent you a text.
Well, I mean, honestly, this mechanic should be on the NBA beat and give Woj some competition.
I got your back, Woj.